Welcome to the Compass Teaching Podcast, where we bring you the latest Sunday morning teachings from our church. Join us as we delve into our current series, Scandalous Witness, Following Jesus in a Divided World. Stay connected and informed, even if you missed the service on Sunday. Let's navigate through the teachings together and discover how to follow Jesus amidst the challenges of today. Tune in and let's embark on this transformative journey together.
Man, we were singing there about the faithfulness of God. And I just want to tell you that we are a people who are simply following Jesus. And there are some moments in your life where even if you're following Jesus or even if you're exploring faith, that celebrating and singing about the faithfulness of God can seem really, really hard. And I just want to say as we kind of get going this morning that no matter where you are in your faith journey, no matter where you are in terms of belief or unbelief or not sure or uncertain, you are welcome in this place. And we are committed to being a community that's going to walk through the hard stuff together, that's going to walk through the uncertain stuff together, trusting that Jesus is going to get us through on the other side. I don't know if you've been paying much attention recently to the news, but there is a presidential election that's on the horizon. That was supposed to be funny. Three people thought it was. All right, I'm off to a great start. And it is really hard to resist all the noise of the political season. And then I'm not much for the news, but I do read some newspapers. I know that makes me old. I read them online. But if you noticed yesterday, our life got even more complex with Iran attacking Israel. And all those things that you see and that you hear and that you experience, they're all working on our formation as we try to make sense of who we are as disciples of Christ Jesus in this world that's really challenging. So what I want to do today is I just kind of want to try to lay some groundwork today for a conversation we're going to have over the next few weeks. And I want to be real upfront with you. I think one of the things we really try to practice here is what you see is what you get. So who we are up here is the same who we are. I yell a little bit more at ball games than I do here. But hey, man, I'm going to be passionate at a ball game. I'm going to be a passionate worshiper. I'm going to be a passionate follower of Jesus, right? And so some of what I'm going to talk about today and over the next few weeks may sound a little frustrating, may sound a little hard. It may be hard because I'm going to call us to something that I don't believe that we're very good at practicing, me included, okay? So I'm going to call us to something. I'm going to call us to be people who are healing in a divided world. And I think sometimes that sometimes we need to get pushed and we need to get prodded a little bit. And so that's what I'm going to be doing. But today I'm trying to sort of lay some groundwork and framework for that. I want to tell you a little bit about my background. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. And this guy right here, this is not my dad or my granddad. So don't think that. This is David Lipscomb. And I attended what used to be known as David Lipscomb University. Now for shorthand, it's just Lipscomb University in Nashville, Tennessee. And David Lipscomb was a leader in what was known as the American Restoration Movement, and specifically in the Churches of Christ. And that's the world I grew up in. And so I had a dad that was in the military, but then I get to Lipscomb University, and I begin to get sort of indoctrinated with the way David Lipscomb thought as I was taking theology classes and whatnot. And David Lipscomb was a pacifist. And David Lipscomb believed that even for Christians to even vote was wrong. David Lipscomb believed that if you cast a vote in an election, that you were saying that the kingdom of the world was greater than the kingdom of God. And so here I am, a very impressionable 18, 19, 20-year-old. Sorry, Mom and Dad, you paid for that would happen to me. But I show up at Lipscomb, and I begin to hear these things, and I begin to walk with professors and walk with staff and walk with people who are just deeply in on all this. And so I became quite formed, actually, in the way David Lipscomb thought for a season of time. In fact, in the Churches of Christ, the tribe I grew up in, there were far more people that believed the way that David Lipscomb did until World War II came along. And then they flipped. And so I find myself as one who likes to believe a lot of the things that I think Lipscomb believed, yet at the same time, I'm a hypocrite, and I confess that this morning. Because there are times when I do vote in elections, and there are times when I don't vote in elections. And if you don't know this about me, I'm actually an elected official. I hold a public office here in the city. I'm a school board member for a local school district. which somebody had to vote for me, and it might have just been me, but I won anyway. And so I'm an elected public official. And so really, I find myself as standing up here this morning and embarking on this, kind of thinking, you know what, I'm a little bit of a hypocrite. And I find myself kind of conflicted. I don't know if you ever find yourself conflicted when you show up with God's people in the church, but hey, I'm part of us, and I find myself in that place at times. And so for the goal for the next few weeks is we want to bolster our witness as God's people, and we want to think about counterformation. What does it look like to be formed in the way of Jesus so that when we find ourselves in conversation, when we're pulled down the rabbit hole with news stories, social media posts, when we're able to find, when we're stuck in those conversations, how do we find a place to stand? All right, I'm just going to say this and I'm going to move on. The church is really, really good at talking about really big ideas. And those things are good and they're true and they're important. And we are really good at talking a lot of times of different seasons about eternity and whatnot. And that is really good and really important. But church, if we can't figure out how to live in the here and now, right now, and be a faithful witness as a disciple of Jesus Christ, then I think we might have our way mixed up a little bit. So that's what I want to help us do. And helping us do that, when I say that, what I mean is I need your help too. Okay, this is not a one-way street. This is a two-way street. I need your influence and your call in my life as disciples as much as I think and I hope that you need mine. Okay, so we're in this together. I'm not saying this is one that's got this figured out. We use this graph on Easter Sunday to talk about intentional spiritual formation. John Mark Comer talks about it, about pulling together teaching and practice and community and the Holy Spirit that happens over time, and you kind of got to go through suffering. And so what I'm trying to propose over the next few weeks is let's do a little bit of counterformation. Let's push back against all the voices that you hear online and that you hear on Twitter and that you hear in the news media, and let's choose to be formed by the voice of God. Or at least, could we be willing to slow down enough to say, maybe there's another way and maybe there's another voice over the talking heads of the news media that just scream at you? And it doesn't matter what side you're on politically, the talking heads are trying to make you angry and they're trying to make you fearful. That's their goal. And that's how they operate. So this morning, Graham read from Psalm 46, and I'm not going to go through that again, but I just want to throw in here for you from verse 10 one more time. One more time, be still and know that I am God. I will be honored by every nation. I will be honored throughout the world. The Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. So here's the invitation. Can we slow down for a few weeks in the midst of a very busy season? Can we say, okay, I'm going to be still and I'm going to know that God is ruling and God is reigning and God is for my best. And I believe that when we lean into that, when we lean into that life, we wind up bearing witness to our life in Jesus Christ. So here are some ground rules real quick. This is not about a particular candidate or a particular party. If you don't know this, we have people all over the political spectrum in this church, and that is not going to change, okay? Two is this. Our hope in this is that we're able to strengthen our witness so we can live as a healing power in the world. If we're not a healing presence in the world, then we are missing out on our calling, and we're falling short of this Psalm 46 life. So I'm going to ask you to bear with me. That's number three. This is a little more of a teaching lesson today and probably next week. And then we're just going to get into some straight preaching to follow. All right. So a guy at Lipscomb named Lee C. Camp, he's a professor. He's written a book called Scandalous Witness, which is where we sort of ripped off the title for this series. It's been helpful in the formation of the series. He opens with a quote by Thomas Merton. Here it is. Thomas Merton says this, a revolution is supposed to be a change that turns everything completely around. But the ideology of political revolution will never change anything but appearances. There will be violence and power will pass from one party to another, but when all the smoke clears and the bodies of all the dead men are underground, the situation will be essentially the same as it was before. There will be a minority of strong men in power exploiting all the others for their own ends. Okay? I think there's more to this, right? There will be violence and power. All right, yeah, let's go to the next slide. There will be the same greed and cruelty and lust and ambition and avarice and hypocrisy as before. For the revolutions of men change nothing. The only influence that can really upset the injustice and iniquity of men is the power that breathes in Christian tradition. That is the only way forward. That's it. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, but we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. And here's the deal, friends. The ministry of Jesus was a straight-up scandal. Camp says this about it. It is, when rightly understood, a stumbling block, foolishness, a scandal to the powers that be. Christianity, as Camp says, he calls it a politic. He's not saying that it has political implications, but a politic is an all-encompassing vision of human history. It's communal life that grapples with all the classic questions of life. So look at all these questions. These are all the questions of life that everybody's trying to figure out. How do we live together? How do we deal with offenses? How do we deal with money? How do we deal with enemies and violence? How do we arrange marriage and families and social structures? How is authority mediated, employed, and ordered? How do we rightfully order passions and appetites? Where is human history headed? Have you wondered that in the last few weeks? Like, where is this world headed? What does it mean to be human? It's a huge question in our world right now. What does it look like to live in a rightly ordered human community that engenders flourishing, justice, and the peace of God? Every one of these questions can be found, the fulfillment to every one of these questions can be found in Jesus. And we aspire to be a Jesus-following people. So what we're going to do today is we're going to slow down and we're going to say, okay, how would Jesus deal with these questions? And we're going to let that be the basis for our conversation for the next few weeks. We're going to start with Jesus. Specifically, we're going to look at the idea of power. And then we're going to look more broadly at what it means to be a witness in a world. Okay. Now, I'm going to throw in a little technical term right here. I'm just going to kind of sprinkle this in here a little bit. I'm going to spend about 20 seconds on it, but I want to say it because I think it's important, but I also don't want you to get derailed on what I'm about to say, okay? Here's where I'm going, all right? And I'm willing to have coffee, have lunch, visit about this if you want to talk more about it, all right? Our leanings and the way we're going to talk about this over the next few weeks are more of an Anabaptist perspective, okay? Now, you're thinking, what is that, all right? Thanks, Chris. All right, let me kind of just, here's the 20 seconds right here. Here's what Anabaptists as a whole sort of aspire to. It's a new conception of the essence of Christianity as discipleship. So when we talk about we're a people who are simply following Jesus, what we mean is we want to be disciples of Jesus. Check. That's not new to us. Okay. Two, it's a new conception of the church as a brotherhood. We have said over and over again that following Jesus is a team sport. You cannot do this in isolation. Check. We've been saying that for a long time. That's not new information. Here's the third one, all right? The third one is a new ethic of love and non-resistance. Now, this is what delineates this conversation. Because what you see is what you get, because I would say this to you offline, I'll say it right here. You can go to a lot of churches in Jonesboro and you can engage in this conversation and they're going to have a different outcome than we are. Their outcome is going to be nuke them, all right? And that's not the way that we function, okay? That's not how we're starting with this. We're going to start out of this viewpoint of a new ethic of love and non-resistance. So you got to start with power, because power is what's underneath all the questions that are currently churning in our world about politics. Power underneath the surface defines and drives and dictates many of the outcomes that you and I get on the surface. And a lot of times when we're talking about politics, or we think we're talking about politics, what we're actually talking about is the power that's underneath the surface. And Jesus has some very clear things to say about power. And what Jesus has to say about power both directs our politic, as we defined it just a minute ago, to use the language of Lee Camp, and our politic informs our public witness and reveals who we are and what we really believe. Because the truth is, power is everywhere. Power is everywhere. If you're a teenager and you got up this morning and you said, I tell you what, I don't want to go to church this morning. Some parent might have said, yes, you are. Okay? If that's lost on you, that's power. All right? Somebody has decided that you're going to pay an electric bill if you're going to have electricity. All right? And if you don't pay the electric bill, what do? They turn it off. That is power. Right? We could keep going through it. Students, when you go to school or you're in college and you take an exam and that professor sends back a letter grade or a numerical grade, that is power. They've been entrusted with some level of authority and they've asked you to chin the bar, right? And so then they've decided, hey, what your work is, it's worth a C or it's worth an A or it's worth a D. I always believed that C equaled continue, and so that was just okay, right? You just kind of keep going. So power is everywhere, right? It can be for good or it can be for not good. It's in every person, every place, every organization. And here's the deal. You know the difference between good power and bad power, whether you can say it or not. And let's be real. You know the difference in the church world between good power and bad power, whether you can clearly articulate it or not. You can just sense it. And unfortunately, the news cycle over the last few years has been full of news stories and conversations about where bad power has been used to hurt people. Now, that's not who we want to be. But we got to talk about power because power is what drives so much of this. So let's define power for just a minute. Let's just take just a few shots at this. Power is that which one person or system exercises over another person or system. We've already kind of demonstrated that. Here's the next definition. A has power over B to the extent that he can get B to do something that B would not otherwise do. Now, you can take out A and B, and you can put your names in there all you want. You can just have all kinds of fun with that, right? Go to lunch and say, hey, do you know that last time you said this to me? That was power. It was the wrong kind. Try that at lunch. Let me know how that goes. Or here's the final definition. It is the exerting of one person's will over another person or group. Here's the key word in this. The key word is over. Over. Power over is not how Jesus works. We're going to get to how Jesus works in just a minute. So you get power over, and then within that, you can get power within systems to keep people in check, or you can get power to, which is when someone it's like running a race and someone hands you a baton and now you've got it and you're like, yes, I'm going to go to town making things right. We can all kind of succumb to this power over idea. And what happens with power over is it morphs into this system where what we're trying to do is we're trying to keep people in check. Now, there's a very popular belief in American Christianity that power in and of itself is simply neutral, okay? Power is neutral. And so then what that means is the right people have got to get their hands on power to use it in the right way. All right, Dan, I'm going to try this out. Not on you, but last week you felt like, you know, like you said, hey, like church, have you ever heard of this? And like three people raised their hands. Let's see how the church does with this. Can we throw this picture up here? How many of you know what movie this is from? Ah, so I won, Dan. Thanks. All right. Power. All right. This is from one of the Indiana Jones movies, right? So I grew up as a fan of Indiana Jones movies. I think my brother was more so family. I think my brother used to have a bullwhip and used to take it and like try to hit people in our family, namely me, with a bullwhip. Or maybe it was me that was trying to hit him. I don't recall exactly, but I think that happened. Okay. All right, here's the deal. If you're not familiar with this, spoiler alert, this is near the end of one of the Indiana Jones movies. If you haven't seen it by now, that's on you, not on me. But here's the deal. They've got the Holy Grail, and the Holy Grail is supposed to provide life. And there in the background, you have Indiana Jones, and you have the guy that's been guarding it for centuries who's now dying because the code has been broken. And so you got this German guy that's holding it. And so they're about to have this fight over who can hold the Holy Grail and who can use the Holy Grail. Okay? Now, clearly, I'm not telling you the entire story. Some of you are already thinking about that, and you'll never hear another word I have to say the rest of the time. But this is the way that a lot of us in American Christianity treat power. We treat it as the Holy Grail, and then it becomes the grapple over who can get their hands on it first and who can wield it in the right way. And if we can just get the right person with their hands on the power, the things will turn out okay. But let me remind you of what Thomas Merton said. There will be violence, and power will pass from one party to another, but when all the smoke clears and the bodies of all the dead men are underground, the situation will be essentially the same as it was before. There will be a minority of strong men in power exploiting all the others for their own ends. There will be the same greed and cruelty and lust and ambition and avarice and hypocrisy as before. Here's what Merton seems to say. Merton seems to say that it doesn't matter who holds the Holy Grail. That's not the point. He says at the end of the day, the outcome is going to be the same if we're all aspiring to power over, and there will ultimately be carnage. And if you've not seen the end of the movie, there is carnage. All right? So power over is the way often that the world works. So there's two types of power that we're going to talk about. We've already talked primarily about power over. Here's the second idea, is power with. Power with. Power with refuses to exercise power over. It is the power of relationship. It's the power released in being with people. It's how power actually works well. It still gets things done, but it goes about doing things in a different sort of way. Because power over always has a default setting of abuse and violence. And you and I can get lulled into thinking that power over, or power, even power with, can fix everything, but power over can become the default. That's why if you look back through the history of the world, there have been all kinds of peaceful movements that have begun very, very peacefully, and then they become violent. Like in the 60s and the 70s, you may not even know this, there was this movement around liberation theology, and eventually they became violent. In 1985, at a Catholic gathering, a Colombian bishop said this. He said, "When I see a church with a machine gun, I cannot see the crucified Christ in that church." See, it started out okay, but it got to the point where they thought, "I've got to bring a machine gun into the conversation." That's when power with gets co-opted to become power over one more time. Think about the civil rights movement from the 50s and 60s. Nonviolence is good as long as it works. And then some people said, "But Dr. King, when it doesn't work, we must fight back." And friends, I'm not saying this to be a jerk. I'm not saying this to be rude. I'm saying this to hold up a mirror to myself as much as anything. Our default setting is power over. It just is. Our default setting is power over. And that's why I said, man, this is a hard teaching to receive. It's a hard teaching to get, because everything in our flesh and everything in our world says power over people. All right, let's spend a few minutes. Let's just dive in with Jesus for just a few minutes, and we're going to move towards wrapping this up. Let's open up to Mark chapter 10. If you've got a Bible, or you brought a phone or an iPad or something, let's look at Mark chapter 10 for just a few minutes. Okay, here's what's going down in Mark chapter 10. We did this text several weeks ago before Easter. We didn't do this exact text for Mark 10. We did another text. Okay, Mark 10, Jesus is loading up with his guys, and he says, "Hey, this is what's got to happen. The Son of Man has got to be killed." And they hear what he has to say, his disciples, and they just don't buy it. They don't get it. They're not on board with it. They're confused about it. They're just sort of frustrated with Jesus. And so then this scene happens right after it in Mark 10, starting in verse 35. Okay? Here we go. James and John, these are two of Jesus' disciples that he's the closest with, right? Peter, James, and John, that's kind of the inner trifecta. So James and John, the sons of Zebedee, come over. This is a different translation, so I'll read off that. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do us a favor." Jesus says, well, what are you thinking? What do you got going on, right? What's your request? And they said, okay, Jesus, when you sit on your glorious throne, we want to sit in places of honor next to you, one on your right and the other on your left. So they go, Jesus, when you make it, when you get out of this place, when you've overthrown Rome, when all things are right, hey, we're your favorites, and Peter, forget about him, but we're brothers, and so, hey, make us, like, cut us in, like, right? We want to be on the right, we want to be on the left. And how does Jesus respond? Well, you don't even know what you're asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of suffering I'm about to drink? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism of suffering that I'm about to be baptized with? Jesus says, you don't even get it. Like, are you ready to go through what I'm about to go through? And look at how they respond in verse 39. Oh, yes, we are able. They don't know what they're talking about at all, right? Then Jesus told them, you will indeed drink from my bitter cup and be baptized with my baptism of suffering. But I have no right to say he will sit on my right or on my left. God has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen. And then, catch this. So Jesus said, it's not going to work out that way, right? When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. Now, let me tell you what indignant really means in the Greek. They were ticked off. And I'm giving you the PG version. My mama's in here, and I don't want to say what they really said, right? They were ticked off. Can you imagine? They've been running around, this group of 12 has been running around with Jesus all this time, doing all these things, right? And two guys slide off, and they're like, Jesus, set us up. We're with you, man. And the rest of them find out about it, all right? So they're indignant, it says. Let's keep going. So Jesus calls them all together and said, you know what the rulers of this world, you know that the rulers in this world, they lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. But among you, it will be different. My translation says, not so among you. Not so among you. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you, I lost my place. Whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Oh, Jesus, come on, come on. Here's the situation. What Jesus is saying here in this text is these two guys and the rest of you fools are trying to make moves in the same exact way to grab power, in the same way that Caesar functions. You're doing it in the same way. You're doing it all the same way. You're trying to pull the play card of power over when I'm trying to live in a world of power with, right? So look what Jesus says. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Okay, Robbie said this a few weeks ago when he preached. The opening bit of this section in Mark chapter 8, there's a man who is blind, and Jesus goes to heal him. And the first time Jesus touches him, the guy blinks, and they're like, hey, what do you see? And he says, I see trees. I see trees. He was looking for people, but instead he sees trees. And I think what Jesus is trying to say in this text, and I think this is what's so important for us to get, is that when you and I run to our default of power over, we see people as trees rather than really as people themselves. Because people are others just to be commodified and just to be pressed to do whatever it is that we want them to do. That's how this works. Not so among you, Jesus says. Not so among you. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ditch the rest of what I've got to say, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to be done. I'm going to give you one example of what power with can look like. I think power with, in the way Jesus works, is the way David Fitch says it. He says it's the practice of two or more persons submitting to the presence of God and to each other to make a decision, negotiate a conflict or disagreement, or find a way forward in a situation. Let's call time out right there for a second. Well, what does that mean? Okay, have you ever had a disagreement with a friend? You don't have to answer out loud. Have you ever had a disagreement with a spouse? Have you ever had a disagreement with a coworker? I know this gets real weird when you start talking about coworkers, so let's kind of give that an asterisk, okay? Just think about it in a family, or think about a friend, or think about just a familiar relationship, or even a familiar relationship. You can make somebody do something because I said so. And I got to admit, as a dad, I'm pretty good at times telling my kids, well, suck it up, buttercup. You got to do it because I said it. Now, that's not nearly as much now because my kids are huge. And they're practically adults, and they're almost off the payroll anyway, right? So I can't lord that over them. Dad, I'm leaving anyway. What are you going to do to me? Right? They don't say that out loud. I can see it in their eyes every once in a while. Right? But what would happen if instead of using power over, we said, hey, let's just sit down at a table and let's just talk. Tell me what you're thinking. Tell me how you got here. Tell me what questions you have. Hey, is there a way forward for both of us in this relationship? Fitch goes on to say this. Mutual submission subverts worldly power over and the antagonism of who wins and makes space for God's power to work among us. Here's what I'm after this morning. I'm trying to get us moving, and I'm trying to invite us into a posture of discernment, which I know that's not the way the world works. The world works out of quick decisions. I mean, bam, 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 get on the next thing. I'm trying to invite us to slow down. I'm trying to invite us to ask ourselves the question, are we a witness for power over or power with in the way we live, interact, lead, engage, worship, and walk through life? Can we be counterformed to the way of power with? But I'm afraid we've been so formed by power over that sometimes it's hard to see and to detect and to understand even in our own lives. Power over people are those who are just completely detached from the action. They've got all kinds of ideas about what you need to do, but they're not willing to get into the action of what's occurring. It becomes power from the ivory tower. Power over people are most often, they've got to be in the driver's seat of every interaction, every relationship. And this is the big kicker. This is what Jesus would say, not so among you. Power over people value authority over relationships. So, church, two questions to end with this morning. Two questions for reflection as we worship, as our kids come back down. How do we notice and talk about power? That's the first question. How do we notice and how do we talk about power? Here's our second one. Does our use of power cause us to see trees or to see people? When you listen to the news, do you see trees or do you see people? When you interact with people on the street who've got a different political opinion than you, do you see trees or do you see people? So as we're just getting going on this for the next few weeks, I just pray the Lord would just reveal himself to us. The Lord will allow us to have eyes to see and ears to hear and hearts to receive and the ability to imagine what can be in the kingdom of God. Let's worship together.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of the Compass Teaching Podcast. We hope that wherever you are, the Lord bless you and keep you. Thank you.